You're listening to the Viral Molly Podcast. Now here's your host, Rob, on the mic.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you're coming over from volleyballmag.com and listening to College Volleyball Weekly on the Viral Volley Podcast. But we got Dave Hunt of Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, and Jay Hossing of George Mason. And we are in week 8 of the Division 1-2 season. And we've started keeping track of COVID cancellations, or what I've referred to as the COVID scorecard. And when I started tracking it, we had 5 cancellations. Then we went to 7, then to 8. And then back down to 3, but actually wasn't a COVID cancellation one. It was a blizzard or rain, snow, something like that. I'm not familiar with that kind of weather here, so pardon the terminology. But excellent news for week 7, 0 COVID cancellations in men's Division 1-2 volleyball. So it's a lot to celebrate. And just want to just a shout out to all those doing the work to keep us all safe out there. Now, you coaches have had to manage quite a bit, but I can only imagine the $10,000 per week of testing, keeping your guys in their patented bubbles or whatever you want to call them. But I mean, it's a great attestation to what you guys are doing. So I appreciate what you guys are doing to keep us all entertained and keep your guys safe, most importantly, and the community. So shout out to you. But let's jump into all the Division 1-2 action. We'll start with the Conference Carolinas. UMO is still the top dog, or Mount Olive. It's our favorite guy, Ali'i Keahohu. Over at Mount Olive, only one loss, 7-1, 7-1 in the Conference Carolinas. So good stuff for him. North Greenville is in second, 6-2. But we're going to jump over. We're going to go to the right coast to the left coast. We're going to start with Jay's conference. And I got to mention it, 2 losses last week that had to hurt. But the top dogs are Engit and Penn State. That's number 14 Engit, number 10 Penn State. I didn't look at the AVCA rankings for this week, so that may be off. So talk about what's happening in the EIVA, Jay.
Yeah, you are off. We're 14th. I think NJIT is 12th, and I think Penn State's 10th. You know, the reality is we were without our starting setter and without our starting libero for the weekend, so we went in, put a couple of true freshmen in there to see how they can handle the fire, and I thought Friday night we did a nice job. They just, you know, had a couple of points in a couple of those sets that were due sets, and, you know, we make a couple more plays. You know, who knows what the outcome could have been, but I thought the response that Penn State had on Saturday night, especially when in recent weeks, their Saturday night has not been maybe as crisp and clean as maybe they were on Saturday. And they handled us. It was there was no shortage of firepower. There was no shortage of ball control. You know, what I'm really most impressed by Penn State is their level of defense. I mean, you watch them play and they are just relentless when it comes to scrambling for balls around the court and getting it back over. Their defenders are really good at digging hard driven balls. You know, Will Bannell is the libero on that team, and he is super solid. But Brett Wildman and Cole Bogner and Fisher, they're all really solid defenders as well. And, you know, when you go against a team that makes you have to hit that one extra shot, it forces you to have to hit a little sharper, a little higher, a little cleaner, and it just, you know, it doesn't go your way sometimes. So, yeah, we were undergunned, but no slam against Penn State. They are very, very good. And NJIT is also very good. We got them coming in our house this weekend, and you know, we want to play the best teams, and we know we've got work to do, and that's okay. And we're just going to get back to the drawing board, and we're going to figure out some things and watch some video and see if we can get better and, you know, get ready for another battle this weekend.
It seems like their middles and Luca Berger has really picked up his game in recent weeks. So he's definitely been a defensive force for the Highlanders. So I'll be watching that one. That was one of my matches of the week to watch. So let's jump. Do you guys have anything to add on the EIVA, Dave or Dan?
I'm curious to see Mason and NJIT as well, Rob. I think that'll be a great match. And certainly, you know, Penn State's good. But we talk about this, you know, I know Penn State's got to play Mason 2 more times. You know what I mean? In terms of that. And so the other piece is, I think, you know, where is St. Francis going to be? You know what I mean? I think they're what? 1-7 in league right now. Charleston's got some wins over them. And so it'll be interesting to see, do those guys rebound? Or do they stay towards the bottom? Or where's going on with those guys? Fisher's a great player for that St. Francis group. And is he the only guy, do you know what I mean, in terms of that? So
I think St. Francis, the challenge that they're facing is they need to have a lineup that they can stick with for a while. You know, yeah. Rummy's been working that lineup around a little bit. And I know that it's pretty frustrating. You can't get in any rhythm because you don't know which guys are going to be out there together. And so I think once Remy finds that out and the team can start to build a little confidence and get a little comfortability with the guys around them, they might start finding some W's and next thing you know, maybe move up the rankings a little bit.
Yeah. How about you, Dave? Anything else to add on to the EIVA?
You know what? Not the EIVA. I'm a little bummed. He jumped right over Conference Carolinas. Rob, when you were talking about Mount Olive, I've gone back and watched them. Jay talked about that was his match. I think match of this upcoming week to watch was with King in North Greenville. Mount Olive, they're hitting 298 on the year, only 7% air. And then when I look at their serving stats, they're serving the ball in at 87%. They have more aces than their opponent and less errors than their opponent. They're going to win a lot of matches doing that. And then you look at them hitting 300. So, don't look over the Conference Carolinas guys in terms of playing good volleyball. So
is that a beautiful mind reference there? All those numbers and look at that breakdown.
Yeah. All of a sudden I'm doing a little research, right? For me, that's going to pay off for them. So I think that's pretty cool.
Cool. Well, did you want to add anything on the EIVA situation there for Jay and his coast?
Yeah, I mean, I like watching NJIT. They're just a real physical team. When I watched Dan's team play them a few weeks ago, you know, Dan got a win in five against them, but it's a scary team. So good luck, Jay.
All right. Speaking of Dan, let's jump over to his home conference and let me look it up. Number seven, McKendree, sits atop the MEVA with a 7-0 record, and they had an upset. Sorry, Dan, on Friday night. You talk about the situation over in the MEVA.
Yeah, McKendree's good. You know what I mean? So they're better than us, and I'm not going to talk about where we're at. I mean, we got to get a little better, and McKendree should be at the top. McKendree should be ranked in front of us, just so you know. There's seven, and I think we're six now. I think they should be in front of us, hands down. And I know people are rumbling about that, and rankings get tough sometimes. And I'm sure it's a question we can talk about later. But the rest of the conference in the middle there is a little bit of a hodgepodge. But you're seeing Ohio State come on, two wins against Loyola, a win against Ball State, at Ball State. I know they're 4-3 right now, but they're just going to keep getting better. They got the Cypress kid and Jacob Pasteur, and so they're going to be dangerous as they get towards the end right there. And Ball State's coming to our place. You saw Purdue Fort Wayne's getting better. They beat Loyola at Loyola. Loyola's without Cole Schaffhauer. I don't know if it's an injury or COVID related. I just know he hasn't been in the lineup right now. And so there's some moving pieces there with them. With us, we don't have our starting opposite. That's a moving piece with us. You know what I mean right now? So, and then Quincy beats Lindenwood, you know what I mean? So they got their first conference win, which is great in terms of that. And so it'll be interesting. I think we get over these next few weeks, kind of how things direction. McKendree's next match is us at their place. And then McKendree's got, you know, they got to play Ball State. They got to play Loyola. They got to play Purdue Fort Wayne. So they got kind of a second half, kind of a tough piece. You know, two of those are on the road in those doubleheaders. So.
Right. Anything to add, gentlemen, Jay or Dave?
Yeah, McKendree, they keep winning the serve pass battle, you know, and I don't know, for those of you that don't know, serving passing is sort of important in our sport. I know that's not said too often, but it is. So McKendree, I mean, they passed in system against Lewis at like 60%. And then you go back and they look at the stats, they're serving in, they're hitting in, and they're passing well. So they're going to win a lot more matches.
All right, Jay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Serve and pass. My guys are so sick and tired of hearing me talk about how important the serve and pass game is, and Dave hit it right in the head. That's slightly important. But, you know, I think I might be jumping ahead a little bit here, but, you know, obviously season is a season. When the playoffs come around, that's when things are really going to get interesting, because you've got, you know, obviously right now McKendree's on top, and I'm just going to continue to say that, you know, they're going to run the board. Let's just say they run the board. The 2-6 teams are all really good teams, and they're going to be battling it out to get into the playoffs and move up in the matches, the quarterfinals and semifinals. Those are going to be some fun matches to watch. And those teams, I think what we're learning is that consistency is going to be key. You know, you can't be hot one night and then cold the next night for any of those matches. And right now we're seeing there's kind of this up and down when it comes to winning one week and then all of a sudden the next week they're not winning, or a team is just beating them and that maybe hasn't beaten them before. You know, hats off to Quincy, first conference win in 4 years. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, and then you look at teams like PFW, you look at Loyola, you look at Ohio State, you look at Ball State. I mean, it's ridiculous how deep that conference is this year. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yep.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's going to be some upsets in every conference tournament. just a guess.
That's what I was texting Rob, though. We already talked about this, like the amount of five gamers you're going to see, the amount of reverse sweeps you're going to see, the up and down play. I think it's going to continue on through, you know, BYU upset, UCLA upset, we're upset. I don't think that's stopping. You know what I mean? So in Long Beach and Santa Barbara, when these teams get in, you're going to see some more of that stuff happen, you know what I mean, in terms of that.
And here's a real question. Obviously, you know, a team that maybe is not ranked beating a BYU team or whatever the case is, that can be considered an upset. But is it really an upset anymore? Is men's volleyball at a point now where, you know, a team like McKendree beating Lewis, you know, maybe 5 years ago that would be considered a quote-unquote upset, but I'm not sure that's an upset anymore. And I like that. You know, I wish we could have a little more cross-pollination. We talked about this in previous weeks to see how people really could stack up. But I'm not sure those are upsets anymore. NGIT beating a Penn State is not an upset at this point for me.
Yeah. All right, let's jump on over to Dave's conference, his home, the MPSF. How about Worley's Wonder Kids is what I like to call them. But what's happening in the MPSF?
Rob's a big fan of alliteration. I appreciate that. Yeah, hey, Worley's
you know
Wonder
what?
Kids.
But you've got Ant-Man on your team, too. You got a superhero on your team, Spencer Wiggins.
I have a few of them on my team, that's for sure. I mean, so going back to Jay's point, at what point is it GCU's not shocking anybody because they're just a good volleyball team, right? Like maybe 4 years ago, you know, when they first came in the conference, was it 4 years ago? Yeah, maybe that win is, oh, I can't believe it, but they've beaten BYU several times now. You know, how many more times are we going to talk about their pin hitters? Their trio of pin hitters is just good. And the shocking thing for me is BYU typically block defense, you know, they're at the top of the country top of the country in terms of blocks, them and Lewis every year in terms of blocks per set. But teams are hitting pretty well against them right now. And, you know, is that a lack of training? Is that a lack of ability to just get into a rhythm? Is that number going to go down as the season continues? We'll see. But that'll be something to keep an eye on is do teams keep putting up the efficiencies that they have against BYU, even in losses, you know, which is something that historically didn't happen against a team like that.
Yeah. Well, I got an answer for you, though. 18 to 20 years. I say that because 1988, UCI men's volleyball went D1 two for the first time. 2006, they're in the first Final Four at Penn State when the famous lights went out. So there's an answer for you. 20 years.
All right.
So, but the MPSF is, you know, obviously Grand Canyon is one of the top teams. BYU had a little stumble last week, but got Concordia, their first ever program when we mentioned over in the volleyball mag piece. But hey, the fact of the matter is the waves are rising and a surfer like me likes hearing that kind of stuff. So let's talk about your team. It's okay. We're on a show here, Dave.
You know what? Before we get to our team, I want to talk about Concordia doing the reverse sweep of UCLA. Concordia, they played four matches going into that match, right? A few against UCLA, they played UCLA once already. They played us twice and they played GCU. They had 10 aces in those four matches. Saturday night against UCLA, they had 11. In that one match alone, Hoppy had 7 of them. So I think their service pressure is going to be key. They're always going to be a good blocking team. Patch does a good job there, former BYU guy. But all of a sudden you start getting 11 aces on a team and those easy points or those quick points are always nice. So.
Yeah. You can talk about your waves now, Dave. It's okay.
Yeah, no.
we're avoiding it. I can tell.
Yeah, I'll talk about Dave's waves. Dave's only losses are what? At BYU?
So Pepper, yeah, but we only scored 6 points in the first set. So
okay. So I think he's got a great group. Dave, who do you got coming up this week?
We play Stanford Wednesday night.
Yeah. I mean, you got Ant-Man, Superhero. They got a great group of guys. Do you know what I mean? So I think Dave, what Dave's doing is trying to kind of be under the radar, but he's not.
Well, you're number three now in the nation.
He's got a really good group. Do you know what I mean? And so, and I think I'm excited for when he's got a BYU coming to him. Do you know what I mean? I'm ready to see that match. I know it's a few weeks down the road though. So.
Yep. How about you, Jay? Anything to add on Dave's waves?
Yeah, no, first of all, I miss surfing terribly. You had to bring up the reference of the waves rising, and, you know, it just reminds me that I don't have any surf in my backyard anymore. But, you know.
You have a golf course.
I do have a golf course.
Come on.
And I just got my fitting. I just got fitted for my new golf clubs coming soon, so I'm super excited about that. But, you know, the reality is this. You know, BYU, I wonder if it's not just BYU maybe not having a great year with their serving or with their blocking defense, but everybody else is just getting better. You know, you got kids that can see the block a little bit better. You got coaches that are training, you know, things to look for and ways to score points. You know, and I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Maybe BYU is missing a couple of steps, but I think everybody else is just getting that much better. And so I liken it to, you know, just, it is what it is. You know, everybody's good. Everybody's got some people that can play really well. There's really good support roles around them. You know, and it doesn't matter how tall you are. We obviously have been talking about wickets for a while. Now, you know, instead of fighting for 6'7" guys, now I got to fight for 6 foot guys with all these other guys. But, you know, that was our bread and butter for a while. So anyways, MPSF, Concordia doing really cool things out there, beating UCLA for the first time in program history. But again, is that an upset? I'm not so sure it really is right now. And Concordia's got, I think last time I checked, they've got 43 guys on their roster and they've got a JV team. And so when you got guys that are fighting, you know, to get some, you know, piece of that pie, you know, competition level is going to rise and progression is going to rise. So pretty stoked on that.
All right, let's move over to the Big West Conference. We got a couple matches, four matches to be exact, that have taken off. I'm going to make this be a hodgepodge segment. I'm not going to answer for the Big West. I'm going to let the consortium of college. Oh gosh, can you get it right now? The three guy other guys on the screen to answer here.
Nice. College of Consortium Coaches.
There we go.
These guys.
Can anyone stop Hawaii? And I mentioned that because they didn't even travel with Philip Humler, who was their starting outside last year. They plugged in guys like Spiros Tsiakas, the Greek freshman. Then they put in Chaz Galloway at the other pin. They were putting in Max Rosenfeld in the middle. Charlie's putting in so many different lineups, and they were just as effective. So I want to get your guys' take on, can Hawaii be stopped at this point? We'll start with, we'll go with Dave on this one.
Well, first off is they have the most overqualified assistant coach in the history of assistant coaches in Milan Zarkovic. So, you know, I've been around him. He's a good friend. It's no shock that they come out of the gate and they're good. I mean, Milan's been overseas for a long time, trains club teams, trains national teams, does all those things. So he's used to that. You know, we have 6 weeks to build up and then we got to go. So, yeah, that's no shock there. But we talked about this, I think, in our very first episode. You know, you have these teams that came back or have these veterans. And what we've seen is it's been hard for them to get it going. Like, I think the assumption was, all right, everyone that came back, all right, it's just going to be just like last year. And we talked about that discredits anybody's work over COVID. It discredits a lot of these freshmen or these impact players. You know, we have three of them that are starting for us. So we'll see. You know, Hawaii has come back and done things like we would expect them to do. But as we've seen across the country, that doesn't last very long for a lot of other programs. So if it happens, cool. If not, nobody will be shocked.
Yeah. All right, let's jump to Dan on this one here. Hawaii, stoppable, unstoppable.
Well, stoppable, but playing very well right now. I mean, they came out of the gate. But so you talk about moving pieces. Gage isn't off the floor. DeSantis not off the floor. Gassman's not off the floor. Rado's not off the floor. That's the guys. You know what I mean? The other pieces, to a point, are somewhat movable. You know what I mean? In terms of that, or they're outside, Colton. You know what I mean? You got, there are five main pieces there. They're not going anywhere. You know what I mean? Two of those guys can pass the entire court. They don't even need the other guy. And Rondo bails them out every time they need a bailout or they're giving up some points. You know what I mean? So they got some pretty good pieces that are pretty stable and have been chomping at them for a while. So I think certainly those couple of Flip's a good player, and the other L2s are good players. And the
second, Libros are people too. Gage Worsley, you're welcome. Out of System Podcast. Love you guys. You, Joe, yeah. And Rado.
Yeah. Those guys are impressive right now. And yeah. Like Dave said, we'll see if they can continue to sustain it for a couple months. And they've got, you know, certainly some other tough matches coming in their wheelhouse. So,
yeah. All right, Jay, your take.
Well, first of all, you know, Dave talks about them having the most, you know, underrated assistant coach in the world. What about Dave's assistant coach, Marv Dunphy? That might be the actual leader of the.
It's Coach underrated. Emeritus. Get it right.
What are you talking about? I'm the assistant coach. Let's get real. Yeah, Marv's over there pulling the strings.
Yeah. Some of these staffs are unreal. But, you know, obviously at the moment, Hawaii is unbeatable. But we haven't seen Long Beach. We haven't seen Santa Barbara. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know what they look like. And I'm not trying to say that one of those teams is going to be the better team out of the two, but I'm just saying we don't know what they're going to look like. When we do, then we'll be able to make a better statement. But at the moment, Hawaii is pretty darn good, and Dan nailed it on the head. They're not moving that many pieces around. They had to this past weekend for various reasons. We don't know what those are. But those five guys are staying on the court when it matters. And you know, I've had the pleasure of coaching Gage Worsley. That kid is ridiculous. I've seen him go up against international Russian players on the 10-foot line and stare and look at him like, you ain't got nothing. And the kid just stays there. He doesn't flinch, doesn't turn his head. Kid's a beast. So, you know, they've got some good players on that team. And I Pat Gassman, you know, I coached him as well on that junior team. And he has got a cannon for an arm. When it lines up, it is just thundering. So, you know, hats off to Hawaii right now. They're on a roll. But let's see what those other guys look like when the season starts progressing. And Port Northridge still hasn't done anything. And I think their first match is March 20th.
I think they just got in the gym yesterday.
I
saw a picture. Somebody posted a picture.
Yeah, it's fortunate because now they're back in the gym. But unfortunate that, man, they have just missed so much time. I hope that they can salvage this season and be able to get, you know, their guys up to speed and be able to compete when it really counts. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
It's actually a great segue for the next sub-question of the Big West category here. But all schedules are out, and we now know that you just mentioned Cal State Northridge comes out March 20th. They take on UC Irvine. So I'll be seeing them that weekend. But also Santa Barbara starts that same March 20th against Long Beach State. So I'm curious, as coaches, is this late start a benefit or is it a detriment? Let's start with you, Dave.
You say me or Dan? Sorry.
Dave.
All right. Yeah. Just checking. I was looking down at Dan's picture there.
All the glory that is Dan.
That's right. So, well, here's where I think it could potentially hurt. You know, no matter how good some of the Big West teams are they going to play enough matches to potentially get an at-large or a second team into the NCAA tournament? So that's where I think it can hurt. You know, somebody from the IBA or even the MPSF is going to have 22 matches. And if somebody goes 8-2, how does that stack up? And that's where I think it could potentially hurt. So we'll see. It seems like Hawaii's trying to get some non-conference in, so they have more than their conference 10, I think it is. But we'll see. That's the area where I think it really hurts them.
All right, let's jump down to Jay.
Dave hit on the head. You only have 10 matches. That's the minimum requirement. If you have COVID reasons or, you know, weather reasons or for whatever reason you can't play, you know, sudden it becomes an Ohio State in the football season type situation where you have less than the number of games. Do you give a team a nod based upon history of tradition of strength? And I don't know what that answer is. I don't know what the committee is going to say, but I think it's a detriment because obviously you need that experience. You can't be successful in a playoff type situation with so few matches against teams that maybe are of equal caliber that have had more experience. They just have more stuff to draw from. And yeah, you're going to, you know, you might get lucky on a night or two, but over time, you know, the experienced teams are just going to win out more when all things are equal across the table. And so, yeah, I think that's the bummer. I'm glad they're playing. I'm glad they're getting something. Just, I wish it was more.
Yeah. And the cleanup position, let's go with Dan.
I think the interesting piece is, so a team like Hawaii, who's got these five main pieces returning, we've seen them play pretty well. What does Long Beach actually have? We hear that Santa Barbara has all the pieces returning, so they could be pretty good out of the gates. Long Beach might struggle a little bit. They got better. Where are they at? Where are the pieces at? We've seen San Diego. They didn't have their senior setter from the year before. They got a new setter in the mix, and we saw that kind of – they're not quite as good. So it's like – I think the teams in this short window that have more pieces and synergy coming back might be in a better spot than the teams that have some more growth. You look at Ohio State in our league, if they only had 6 weeks to play to kind of get into it, I think they'd have been in trouble. But the fact they started in January, they might have a better shot at being in a really good spot at the end in terms of that. And so I think that's what plays into it. But I think Dave hits a good one too. I think one of the Volley Talk questioners was about the selection stuff. We get down to it. If they haven't played enough league teams there and the championships in Columbus, one at large is coming out of the East or Midwest and one's coming out of the West Coast. Cause it's just going to be easier from a travel standpoint. If there's not enough disparity in the record and everything that's going on, it goes that way for sure. So
there you go. You heard it there first. And Dan actually took on those Volley Talk questions, those brutal ones. So, but actually is a good segue into our lightning round, which worked well last week. And we'll look over that one again, but I wanted to throw some questions your way that we got from our listeners. So the first one is, it seems that limited substitutions restricts the ability to develop or reward bench depth. Would you guys like to see more allowed substitutions, and how would that change, and how would you manage the match? We'll start with Jay.
Well, first of all, with all the substitutions that the women's game has, it has eliminated their ability to play the game all the way around for some of those players. And so when they move up in ranks and they move on maybe to a national team or an international professional league, it hurts them when they try to get in the back row. For the men's game, we follow what the international rules are. So until that changes, I don't want to change it. I don't want more substitutions. It slows the rhythm of the game down. I like 6-1. It forces guys to have to play the game all the way around. And I think unless the FIVB says, hey, we're going to go to 12 subs and here's what you can do, I'll entertain it at that point. But until then, please don't add more substitutions to it.
Let's go to Dan.
I'd be worth that. So it's six subs right now, but I would be the unlimited on the six. So it gave you just a little bit more movement, you know what I mean, in terms of pieces. I wouldn't want to ever change the subs. And I agree with Jay, we shouldn't go to 12 or any of that stuff, you know what I mean? But with the six right now, you just have one entry. I'd be okay, even if you just did two entries. You know what I mean? So maybe you got to use a guy twice versus once. Or you just did the six kind of unlimited entries and you could use it however you want to. It gave you, we're carrying these heavy rosters and we give you a couple more pieces to move. That would be the positive. The negative on it is like, hey, I need my middle to learn how to serve. You know what I mean? In a real match, if he's going next level, but how many of these guys are going next level? So that's kind of where the you know what I mean, in terms of that. So,
and Dave, your take.
Yeah, after spending time with Karch and the women's team, please God, don't ever change our sub rules away from international volleyball. That's all I have to say. And we train. I think I'm speaking for all coaches when I say we train and develop our athletes in the practice gym. That's where it happens. The match stuff is just sort of a reward and a culmination of everything that takes place in the practice gym. So as long as we get 132 days, however many it is, to practice, then I'm good with that.
I think somebody was bashing me for not subbing Tyler Mitchum out when he's serving, and we sub him once, and I'm just like, one, you don't know the rules because we can only sub in once, and two, when Tyler's good serving, you don't want to be on the other end. So I might be able to weather the storm mid-season right now as he's continuing to gain confidence in the match, because towards the end he might be serving aces back there in terms of
that. Was me saying that last year. Hey, sub them out from down the other side. Yeah, sub them out.
All right, next question. I'm going to call this a Jay Hossack question, so you're going to go last, Jay, but it's called the, what is your criteria for filling out the AVCA poll, or what would it be? let's just do that. We'll start with you, Dave.
What is my criteria? I sit down and say, who should the top 15 teams be? I don't know. I lean heavily towards matches played, right? Matches played, you know, you can't, do I hold it against somebody for losing? Well, not over somebody that hasn't played a match, right? If you aren't even playing, I think I have Santa Barbara still up there relatively high, but they've dropped every week as other teams have played. So they're sort of my one team. I had Hawaii a little bit lower, and then they came out and proved that they're pretty darn good. So I moved them right back up. So yeah, play matches. And so I can see you play. And then going back to thinking about some of the teams, I've had Ohio State up there for a while, even when they had lost matches, because what I see on video is a really good team. That's just playing tough teams. So yeah, it's play matches, and then I'll evaluate you from there.
All right, let's go to Dan.
Yeah, I think all of us have stayed consistent with what we've talked about this a couple of times, and we've had teams, and there have been some movement when matches get played, and like I have Santa Barbara a little higher because I know the piece is coming back. I have Long Beach a little bit lower because I don't know the piece is coming back in terms of that, and that's I stayed pretty consistent, and McKendree beats me. I put him in, you know, I think everybody's kind of got their rhythm of kind of where they're at with some of this stuff going on. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that, Ohio State's playing good. They're up there. Penn State got a couple more wins, so they bumped them a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And so if you go look at our three polls, I think they're pretty consistent with how we've done things and what we're doing. I think where some of those people get frustrated is some of the guys maybe not doing as much homework when they're doing the polls, or maybe they have their own rhythm. I don't know. I'm not talking to those guys. You know what I mean? I'm trusting that they're doing their homework and they're kind of doing. I also think polls can be somewhat subjective and people just want to find something to talk about more than what they need to. Do you know what I mean? And so there's a lot of good teams that are not even a couple that aren't even ranked. We talk Concordia just beat, you know, UCLA. So there's a lot of good volleyball going on in that range. We've got some Conference Carolina teams, Mount Olive. If you haven't watched them, they're good. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of good things going on.
And finally, the guy who's caused earthquakes, fissures in the planet, Jay.
Earthquake, causing earthquakes. Are you trying to tell me I need to drink skim milk? What's going on? There's so much to unpack with this topic question. But let's just start out.
We don't have enough time for you to unpack. I need like a pretty sick
lightning round.
grab a beverage of choice and watch this part. Now, here's the issue. Every coach, Dan hit it correctly. Every coach has kind of got their own rhythm. The coaches that have been doing this for a while know what to look for. They should be watching matches. They should be watching results. And they should be, you know, putting, you know, teams ranked upon consistent values that they each hold. Mine this year has been different than most years because obviously I've been rewarding teams that are playing versus teams that are not. Doesn't mean that I don't think those teams that are not playing are not worthy of being a top team. It just means for now, I don't know what you look like. So how can I justify putting a team like UC Santa Barbara in the top five? And this is for me. You know, I know some of these other guys may have voted them in other places. That's okay. That's their choice. But for me, I can't justify putting that team in there until I watch them play. Now, it could take one match. It could take five matches. Who knows what the number will be. But when I get a chance to see them play, my goal is to put the rankings of the teams that are doing the things that week, but consistently over the course of the season. If we shifted the numbers based upon who wins one weekend, those guys are going to be all over the map. So now what? Are we going to drop BYU all the way out because they lost? No, we're not going to do that. I still think BYU is a really good team. And so I dropped him down to number two behind Hawaii. Now, you want to talk about the curse? BYU lost. I have them number one. So, you know, you want to keep that mojo moving. I'm
don't
taking all
vote Pepperdine number one, okay, Jay? Don't vote Pepperdine number one.
I've got Hawaii number one right now, and rightfully so. And listen, again, the curse is fun, more fun than it is actual serious. But, you know, I'm batting 750 right now. That's not too bad.
Hey, I'm ready. Hawaii goes down. Pepperdine's up at one. And Jay,
great. Right.
Yeah, I got to put Penn State number one and NJIT number one when I see them next. That's right.
All right, gentlemen, let's call that an episode right there due to time constraints for a few of us here. We've got to get to our commitments, but that's Dave Hunt of Pepperdine, Dan Friend of Lewis, and Jay Hossick of George Mason. I'm Rob on the mic, and we got a solid week eight of action coming up. Looking forward to connecting next week, gentlemen.
All right.
See you guys.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Viral Volley Podcast Podcast. Be sure to follow Rob at Rob on the Mic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or at robonthemic.com. Check you next time.